It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Well, today we're getting a little analytical. We're going to have a comedy program, and we're going to have a program about how to make comedy programs on the radio. So we'll get the entire picture, if you will. The comedy program will come first, and that's Ed Gardner's Duffy's Tavern. This one's called Party for the Film Critics, and it's from October 12th of 1951.
In just a moment, we swing open the doors to Duffy's Tavern and welcome back Ed Archie Gardner. But first, here's a reminder about our lineup of programs on NBC. Tonight, here You Can't Take It With You, featuring Walter Brennan as Grandpa Vanderhoff, the leader of the lovable, laughable Vanderhoff clan. Yes, you can always have a good time when you invite the Vanderhoffs to your home, and you can have them by merely tuning to your NBC station. Also this evening, there's High Adventure with screen actor Frank Lovejoy on Night Beat. Night Beat is the pulse-quickening action drama that brings you the story of ace newspaper man Randy Stone, the story of the high adventure of front-page news reporting. Then, tomorrow, there's fun in store for you with Monty Woolley as he comes to the NBC microphone as that Shakespearean actor of infinite jest and wit, the one, the only, the magnificent Montague. Yes, there's plenty of fun in store for you with Monty Woolley, Shakespeare's greatest exponent of the barbed comment, tomorrow as the magnificent Montague. This evening, here, You Can't Take It With You and Night Beat. Then, tomorrow, Monty Woolley as the magnificent Montague. Hear all three on NBC. Transcribed.
Quiet, everybody. Hello, Duffy Tavern, where the elite meet to eat. Famous movie producer Cecil B. DeArchie speaking. Oh, hello, Duffy. You heard me, movie producer. Well, you know, I made that picture, The Man with My Face, and then this summer I went to Europe. Huh? No, I didn't have to leave the country. In fact, some of the newspaper critics was nice enough to say that the picture was the year's greatest fiasco. And speaking of critics, Duffy, guess who's coming to dinner here tonight? Only Luella Parsons, Walter Winchell, Ed Sullivan, Hedda Hopper, Erskine Johnson, Earl Wilson, Dorothy Kilgallen, Herbie the Midget. Yes, Herbie criticizes newsreels for Reader's Digest. Well, they're all coming down here tonight to condole me on me success. And Duffy, I'm going to give him a meal fit to choke a horse. Which reminds me, how is Mrs. Duffy? Well, how was the vacation? Fishing, swimming, boating, good food. Sounds wonderful, Duffy. Well, maybe next year she'll take you along. Okay, I'll call you back. Say, Fats.
Yes, sir.
Fats, have you got a copy of today's paper?
Yes, sir, right here.
I wonder what Hedda Hopper has to say about me today. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, here it is. What beautiful blonde Hollywood film star is that way about what handsome movie producer? It's the sixth time she's mentioned me this week.
Gee, she mentioned me too.
What do you mean?
If you're a handsome movie producer, I'm a beautiful blonde.
Please, a little more respectful. You are aware, are you not, that the cinema is a pretty big industry?
Granted.
You are aware that an important motion picture deserves to be treated with respect?
Granted.
And you also know that I am an important movie producer? I suppose I'm not an important movie producer?
Granted.
Well, that's better. So, kindly bear it in mind from here into after, will you, Violet?
Boy, that movie business has certainly changed you.
Well, why shouldn't I change? After all, still water can't remain stagnant. Don't don't forget, I'm now a contemptuary of such people as Howard Hughes and Samuel Goldwyn and the Warner Brothers. And, you know, you can't be cast among pearls without becoming a bit of a swine. Yeah, it's a wonderful feeling to be a genius, Fats. All my life, people used to call me Archie the Jerk. Now I've proved myself. But you know one nice thing about me?
What?
In spite of the fact that success has gone to my head, I haven't changed a bit.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Mr. Zanuck.
Yes?
Duffy says not to forget to put out the garbage.
Say that again.
Put out the garbage.
Put out the garbage. There's a certain loop to that phrase. Might make a wonderful title for my next vehicle. Fats, play me a little mood music while I think of a plot to go with it.
I got just the thing.
Good.
I want you to come along with me. Mississippi, I said the Mississippi. Yeah. We'll take a boat to the land of dreams. Steam down the river, down the river. A bell will be there to meet us. And our old friends will greet us with some fried chicken. Heaven on earth, that must be Basin Street. Must be. Basin Street is the street where the elite always meet in New Orleans. You never know how nice it seems, just how much it really means. I'm glad to be, yes, sirree, where welcome's free and dear to me, where I can my Basin Street blues.
To get the joint ready. Any minute now, one of them newspaper critics might walk in.
Oh,
hello, Finnegan. Hey, my, you smell pretty.
Oh, thanks, Arch. I've been using me sister's shaving cream.
You mean to tell me that your sister shaves?
Well, certainly she has to. If she ever let a mustache grow, we couldn't tell her from me mother. Hey, Arch. Guess what? Guess. I just went to see that movie of yours.
Oh, well.
Well?
Well, flatter me and get it over with.
Well, Arch, I sure got me money's worth.
You did, huh?
Yeah, I sneaked in.
Then what do you mean you got your money's worth?
5 minutes after it started, I sneaked out.
Well, tell me, what didn't you like about it?
It was too long.
But you said you only stayed there 5 minutes.
You heard me. It was too long.
Look, Finnegan, when I want the moron's opinion, I'll ask you for it, you toothless crumb.
Look, Arch, I ain't the only one. You know yourself, the critics said it was lousy.
Well, that's different. The critics know what they're talking about. Now, if you don't mind, I'd be behooved at your disappearance. I'm busy making arrangements for a big dinner party here tonight.
Big dinner party tonight? Oh, boy. What time should I be here? Eh?
Sometime tomorrow morning.
Wait a minute. You mean you ain't inviting me?
Well, you see, you're at a low class, and...
But, Arch, you're me old pal.
Finnegan, please, don't make it difficult for me to despise you.
Arch, you're not forgetting your old friends, are you?
Old friends?
Yeah.
Old friends, how long have I known you?
20 years.
And now I'm a success. Do you want to presume upon a chance acquaintance?
A chance acquaintance? Ah, it's you and me. It's been buddies.
Buddies?
Yeah.
Name me an incident.
Oh, what? You mean you've forgotten the old days at Harrigan's Wharf when we used to go fishing together? The time we were so poor we only had one wine? You remember?
Certainly I remember. And I gave half of the wine to you.
That's right. And it was delicious. Believe me, Arch, I never thought I'd live to see the day when your old friends wasn't good enough for you.
Please, you got me wrong, Finnegan. Me old friends is every bit as good as they ever was. It's only that now I'm better. Now, please, the interview is at an end.
Oh, Archie.
Oh, yes, Miss Duffy.
There's a man over there claims he saw a mouse in his soup.
Complaining, huh? This is what comes of serving clear soup.
Well, what do I do about it?
What do you do about it? Do like everybody else does. Blame it on Dean Atchison. I guess the customer's real sore, huh?
Well, from the way he was frothing at the mouth, I don't think he wants a second helping.
Well, if he's that finicky, give him back his nickel. And, by the way...
Yeah?
Take the broth back to the kitchen. Strain it, of course. Incidentally, I'm glad to see you back from your summer hiatus.
My high water?
You never did have a high water. I'm talking about your vacation. Did you manage to get anything on the third finger of your left hand besides the sunburn?
Archie, it's pure inferring that the only thing I think about is...
I am not inferring that. I am merely inferring, as I have often told you, that you are the only dame who, when she moves, she sends a change of address card to her peeping Tom.
So what? So I'm sentimental. So what's wrong with being sentimental?
But, Miss Duffy, you're so aggressively, passionately sentimental.
So what? So look at Peggy Joyce.
What about Peggy Joyce?
If she hadn't been sentimental, do you think she'd have all that jewelry?
Well, no.
And what about the Dionne quintuplets?
What about them?
If their parents hadn't been sentimental, where would they be today?
Look, Miss Duffy, Papa Dionne had more time to be sentimental. I'm a big movie producer.
You a big movie producer?
Have you, pray chance, seen a picture called The Man with My Face?
Yes.
Well, when the credits came on the screen, didn't you notice anything familiar?
Familiar? Oh, yes. The sailor sitting next to me. Boy, did I have to slap him plenty.
You slapped him, a sentimentalist like you? Look, I'm talking about the credits.
What are they?
Well, you know, they showed them at the opening of a picture. Written by so-and-so and acted by so-and-so and... directed by so-and-so.
Oh, which so-and-so are you?
The producer, the big so-and-so. And if I do say so myself, I did a magnificent job on that picture. Now, tell me, do you remember which part you enjoyed the most?
Sure. The part right before I had to slap the sailor.
This is the trouble with pictures, the inferior minds we have to cater to. 12 years old.
That sailor wasn't 12 years old.
He pluribus. That a great creative brain like mine should be exposed to such childish prattle. Forsooth, Miss Duffy, my head is beginning to ache.
And I bet I can tell you what's making your head ache.
What?
Growing pains.
Oh, yeah.
My, but you're all dressed up.
I know. I'm meeting a fella in front of Lefty's pool room at 8 o'clock.
Oh, yeah? Who?
How do I know who'll be in front of Lefty's pool room at 8 o'clock? Where's the swell head?
Oh, he's getting dinner ready for them big shot newspaper friends of his.
Friends of his? Why, he couldn't get his name in Luella Parsons' column if he shot Hedda Hopper.
Very funny. Now, will you guys stop standing around, Finnegan? I thought I told you to go in the kitchen and stuff the olive.
So I did stuff him, Mike, but after the second bottle, I lost my appetite.
You don't mean you had all the olives. Well, it's a lucky thing we still got a few radishes. Or have we? Let them eat celery. Which reminds me, Pat, do you find we got enough good silverware?
The best in town. Knives from the Waldorfs, tombs from the Aston. I wonder where this fork came from.
Let me see. Fork must be from Lindy's. It tastes from herring. Now, let's see. What's this? It's anchovy paste.
Anchovy paste?
Yeah, I wonder what that's for.
Probably for killing anchovies.
Oh, well, then get busy and sprinkle it around. Now, leave us make a final check here. Pats, answer the phone, huh?
Why don't you answer it? You're standing right next to it.
Pats, please, in movie producer circles, nobody who is anybody answers the phone as long as there is anybody who is nobody around to do it.
Hello, United Archie Productions. Pats, the nobody speaking. It's for you, Mr. Archie.
Well, heavens to Betsy, man. Get the name.
Might I ask who's calling, sir?
Thank you. It's a Mr. Duffy, and he also gave me a name for you.
Was he smiling when he said it?
When you say that name, you gotta smile.
Hello, Duffy. Huh? Well, of course the press party's still on. Duffy, stop worrying, will you? I guarantee if them newspaper columnists don't show up, I'll pay for the dinner out of my own pocket. Well, certainly. Walter Winchell would sooner cut off his right hand than disappoint me. Okay.
Archie, look at this paper. Guess who went to Miami this morning?
Who?
Lefty Winchell.
Well, he's the type of person who's crude enough to go to Miami out of season. We can do well without him. Finnegan.
Yeah?
Erase Winchell's name from his paper plate.
Mr. Archie, It's getting late and none of your newspaper friends have shown up.
They ain't, have they? Maybe I ought to give Dorothy Kilgallen a buzz. Hello? Oh, hello, honey. How's things? Huh? Of course I do, baby. Well, certainly I missed you. Well, look, I don't want to take you away from the laundry. Put Miss Kilgallen on. Hello? Oh, hello, Dorothy. This is Archie. Archie, remember the man with my face? I was the producer. Hello? Hello?
What happened?
We were disconnected. Lucky thing I don't run the motion picture industry the way they run that telephone company. Let's see. I think I better give Lenny Lyons a ring. Hello, Leonard Lyons, please. Oh, hello, Lenny. This is Archie. Remember, I'm phoning you to remind you of the party at Duffy's Tavern tonight. You can't make it? You got a bad headache, huh? Well, thanks, old man, for calling me and letting me know.
Headache, huh?
Yeah, he gets it quite frequently. Full motor trouble, you know. Let's see who else. Oh, yeah, Luella Parsons. Hello? Oh, hello, Lolly. You coming to the party tonight? Oh, a headache, huh? Well, thanks for calling me and letting me know. Well.
Another headache?
Yeah, must be an epidermis. Yes. See, oh, yeah. Hello, is Hedda Hopper there? Now, tell her Dr. Fussbaum is calling. Dr. Fussbaum. Oh, hello, Hedda. This is Dr. Fussbaum. Tell me, how is today your headache? You ain't got no headache? Well, in that case, this is Archie. Oh, now you got one. Look, Hedda, you don't have to beat around the bush. If you think the picture stinks, why don't you just tell me? Well, that's better. At least she has a valid reason for not coming.
Well, Mr. Archer, look like your big shot friends has let you down.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't have believed it, Fats, after all I've done for them columnists. Like the time I gave that Winchell a tip that Clancy the cop was that way again.
What way?
Drunk. And the time I gave Earl Wilson a tip on Dagmar on television.
What tip?
I told him someday she'd be as big as Faye Emerson. Now I asked them for a favor, they turn the other cheek on me.
Well, I'm going to give them 5 more minutes. If they don't show up by then, they're in for reprisals.
What do you mean?
I'm going to quit reading newspapers. Bats, in the meantime, play another number.
Okay.
No one to walk with, I'm by myself. No one to talk with, but I'm happy. All the shuffling is behaving. I'm saving my love for you. I know for certain the one I love. I'm through with writing, it's you that I'm thinking of you. Misbehaving, saving my love for you. Like Jack Arnold in a corner, don't go nowhere and I don't care. Your kisses are always waiting for believe me. Don't stay out late, I don't care to go. I'm home about 8, me and my radio. Keep misbehaving, I'm saving all my love for you. Like Jack Connor in a corner, don't go nowhere, I don't care. Your kisses are worth waiting for. Don't stay out late, I don't care to go. I'm home about 8, me and my radio. Keep misbehaving, I'm saving all my love for you.
Well, tell me, are you still going to have that big dinner?
Well, certainly I'm going to have the dinner. If I don't have it with my guests, I'll have it al fresco. Alone.
Alone? But, Mr. Archie, what about your pals around here?
Me, a famous movie producer, eat with you's bums? Me, the darling of the press? Now, if you don't mind, commence serving. I'd like to start off with the guinea toast on hen.
Okay, but you're going to be awful lonely.
Lonely is as lonely does. Now, just see that there's only one chair at the table, and that chair is for me.
Okay, here's your chair.
Thank you, Boor. Wouldn't have believed them newspaper guys could do this to a sweet guy like me.
Oh, my, what a gay party. Finnegan, look at Archie sitting there surrounded by all of his important friends.
I don't see nobody.
Those are his important friends.
Look, Miss Duffy, this ain't funny. Fats, the next course, please. The laminated herring. And please, leave me have a couple of caviars on the side.
Oh, and be careful, Fats, that you don't spill the caviar on Hedda Hopper's dress. By the way, Hedda, that's a beautiful gown you're wearing. Just as delicate as a spider web. Wherever did you buy it?
I didn't buy it no place. I have me own spider.
Shut up, will you, wise guys? You're all just jealous because the only people you can get to snub you is a bunch of nobodies. And another thing, Fats.
Yes, sir?
There's something wrong with these caviars.
What's wrong with them?
They got a fishy taste. Now, I want you to replace them.
Mr. Archie.
Huh?
It ain't the caviar.
Then what is it?
Just the fact that you ain't used to caviar.
Visent the wit.
Listen, how would you like to have some of the stuff on that table over there?
Big speaking sauerkraut there. Who's it for, Fats?
Well, it was for a party we had fixed up for the homecoming of a friend of ours.
Who?
Oh, a certain fella. But he couldn't get here because his head got too big to come through the door.
Fats, this guy with the big head, is there anybody I know?
Yeah, you know him. Of course, you don't know him as well as we know him.
I think I know who you mean. I got some news for you, Fats. That guy you picked the pig's knuckles and sauerkraut for, He just got his head through the door.
You mean you whom again?
Yep, Pats. Archie, the stuck-up movie producer, is no more. You are now just talking to plain Archie, the pheasant who has returned to his flock.
You see, Archie, what happens when you get to be too good for your old friend?
Yeah, and it taught me a lesson, never to act conceited again. So what do you say, gang? We all propose a toast.
To what?
To me.
Oh, okay, I've got a toast.
Something flattering, of course.
Well, it goes like this.
Yeah?
Let wealth and fame forsake you. Your fair weather friends will shake you. They will brush you off as though you were a crumb. But real friendship has this virtue. All your old friends won't desert you, for they love you. Be you famous or a bum.
Oh, gee, that's beautiful, Miss Duffy. You know, gang, I'm ashamed of myself. I've really acted like a heel.
Arch, it's good to have you back.
Finnegan, please quit crying, Finnegan. Finnegan, you're watering the sauerkraut. Please, stop. Excuse me. Hello? No, they never showed up. But don't worry, Duffy, you ain't going to lose nothing. I'll pay for the dinner myself. Well, the friendship of swell friends like Fats and Miss Duffy and Finnegan, you know, and even a slob like you, it's worth a lousy $8. And besides, it's learned me a great lesson in humility. Okay, kid.
Just a second, Archie. I resent you saying our friendship is only worth $8.
Miss Duffy, will you please pass the pig's knuckles and keep your big mouth shut?
Now, look, Arch, that's no way to talk to a lady.
And look at whom is telling who how to talk to dames.
But, Arch, I only...
Quiet, you unmitigated oaf.
Mr. Archie,
and
please...
And you keep your mouth shut, too. The audacity of a bunch of ignorant peons telling me how to act. Now, in the future, I wish you'd please remember, you are talking to a famous motion picture producer.
Listen in again next week, friends, to Duffy's Tavern. Yes, Duffy's, with Archie the Manager, Finnegan, Miss Duffy, and Eddie transcribed. In the meantime, till we meet again next Friday, here's a program note about some of the fine shows you can hear over this weekend and on Monday. Tomorrow, hear Bob and Ray with their delightful satire and nonsense sketches featuring their vocal impersonations and impressions. Also on Saturday, there's Grand Old Opry with your singing host, Red Foley, and all the gang. And on Sunday, the big show will come to you from Paris with such outstanding stars of the theater and motion picture world as Fred Allen, Francois Rosé, William Gargan, and your unpredictable hostess, Tallulah Bankhead. Also on Sunday, Theater Guild on the Air brings you a solid hour of radio drama. This Sunday, Diana Lynn, Kenny Delmar, and Dan Daly will be featured in Casanova Brown by Nunnally Johnson. Then on Monday, enjoy the sparkling premiere of the Mario Lanza Show. The Mario Lanza Show features Ray Sinatra and the orchestra and lovely soprano Giselle McKenzie. And earlier on Monday evening, there are such other music programs as Voice of Firestone, The Telephone Hour, Band of America, and The Railroad Hour. Well, there you have the lineup. Saturday means Bob and Ray and Grand Ole Opry. Sunday, Theater Guild on the Air.
From October 12th of 1951, that's Duffy's Tavern, Party for the Film Critics. Now we're going to have a program that tells you how to make old-time radio. This was done back in the day. It's called Behind the Mic, and it's from 1941. It's called Comedy Broadcasts.
Radio's own show, Behind the Mic. Radio. With a switch of your dial, radio brings you tragedy, comedy, entertainment, information, education, a whole world at your command. But there are stories behind radio. Yes, stories behind your favorite program and favorite personalities and radio people you never hear of. Stories as amusing, dramatic, and as interesting as any make-believe stories you hear on the air. And that's what we give you, the human interest, the glamour, the tragedy, the comedy, and information that are behind the mic. And now presenting a man whose name has been a symbol of the best in radio since the beginning of broadcasting, Graham McNamee.
Thank you, Gilbert Martin, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience. This afternoon, Behind the Mic shows you how a radio comedy broadcast is written. We bring you the sound effect of the week, a dramatization of an amusing little incident involving orchestra leader B.A. Rolfe. How a singing trio is being groomed for radio success by NBC. A salute to one of radio's favorite old programs, Whittall's Anglo-Persians, featuring the music of Louis Katzman. And finally, a dramatic story behind a broadcast by Tom Powers, well-known star of radio and stage. For those of you who wonder how your favorite comedian puts together a program, we're going to show you how this is sometimes done. And if you think it's easy, Gandhi is India's best-dressed man. And now, writing on a comedy program very often starts 2 weeks before the broadcast, as most comedians like to keep at least a week ahead of their scripts. Nowadays, a comedian may have, say, two main writers or more, and a number of subordinate writers. Let's say we attend the meeting of a comedian whom we'll call Eddie McGee and his two main writers, Jack Pun and Joe Gag, at Eddie's home, where they're getting their first program ideas.
All right, fellas. Now, what'll we do for our opening routine?
Well, how about some jokes about you going to the racetrack and losing your shirt?
No, I think that's been overdone. Comedians have lost their shirts so much, laundrymen are picketing the bookies.
I think he's right, Jack.
But look, I've got some good gags for it. Good how the gag. Racetrack had a beautiful infield, and after the third race, you had it for lunch. Oh, another guy picks your pocket and takes your wallet and the list of the races you were betting on. Then the guy takes one look at the list, and he hands back your wallet with an extra dime for car fare.
Very funny.
Don't like it?
Didn't Bob Hope do something like that?
Well, so what? We'll twist him.
And what twist have you got?
Well, instead of eating the infield after the third race, you eat it after the fifth.
Oh, fine.
I don't like the jokes anyway for Eddie's program, Jack. Even your wife wouldn't laugh at them.
What do you mean, wife? I'm married to my jokes.
It'll never be a successful marriage.
Why not?
Your wife's older than you are.
Oh. Hey, that's not bad. That's not bad. We can use that in the script.
Hey, boys, we're forgetting something.
What
is it, Joe?
That's going to be the Washington's birthday program. We've got to have the first routine on George Washington.
Oh.
How you never tell a lie and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right, Joe. Now, for our second routine, we'd better carry on the feud between Phil and me about the money I say I lent him.
Mm-hmm.
He still refuses to pay me back.
Yeah, we could carry that on for two spots.
Well, how about the last spot, fellas? We need a good sketch.
It's getting around income tax day.
And that's a goodie, an income sketch.
Yeah, if you can say it.
Yeah. Well, listen, suppose you fellas start thinking about that. I think we ought to...
There may be several other fellas, or perhaps enough of them to give us adequate national defense, working on the show, but their function is generally to submit jokes on subjects that the main writers and the comedians have selected. Two or three days later, the main writers and the comedian get together again. Everything's been written except the sketch.
Here it is, Eddie. Here it is. Look. Joe and I have been talking this thing over, and we got a sketch that works out like this. Listen now. You come into the income tax office.
Yeah.
You've been looking through your income tax, and you find out that you didn't pay the government enough for 1938. You owe them $5.42. Well, now, being an honest guy, you want to pay the income tax department this back tax, which they ain't discovered that you haven't paid.
The income tax collector doesn't believe you.
Yeah, naturally. Well, that's good. Go on.
Okay. He says that probably the real reason you want to pay your back tax is that you're a crook. And that it's your way to ease your conscience.
Oh, say, I like that. There's always comedy and menace.
Well, it gets you sympathy.
Yeah.
That's what makes Jack Benny.
He thinks you're a criminal, so he calls the police station. And the next scene, you're in the police station being third degreed. The police are trying to find out what crime you committed.
And you keep saying that all you want to do is pay your $5.42 back income tax. We throw in a lot of gags back and forth.
Then the cops decide you're nuts. It isn't a case for them. It's a case for the psychopathic ward.
So in the next scene, you're in the psychopathic ward. You've been there a month.
A psychoanalyst comes in, and he starts to psychoanalyze you.
And after you psychoanalyze, the guy from the income tax department comes back, and he says that they studied your case, and they decided to let you go.
Yeah, but that's no punch finish.
Yeah, but that ain't the finish.
Oh,
listen,
go ahead.
You go back to the income tax department, and the income tax collector isn't there, see?
He's out.
He's on a vacation.
Yeah.
There's a new man taking his place. You tell him that you're there to pay $5.42 back income tax. He starts giving you the same business as the first guy. He's just about to accuse you of being a criminal.
When you say, I'll save you the trouble, you grab the phone yourself and say, hello, give me police headquarters.
Hey, that sounds like the nuts. And I just thought of a great gag for the Psycho LaLancia scene.
Yeah, if you can say it.
Yeah, well, anyway, the doctor says to me...
Well, after the writers whip the sketch together, the comedian usually goes over it himself and makes changes and, working with his writers, gags it up or cuts it. And now some, although not all comics, have previews of radio programs. That is, about a week before the broadcast, they try out their script in a live studio audience, invited especially for that purpose. After the tryout, the main writers and the comedian get together at the comedian's home once more.
Say, did you fellas mark down the gags that laid eggs? I laid so many, I feel like front man for a hen.
Oh, no, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. If those weakies go out, it'll tighten the script. Then we'll get better laughs on the other gags.
And so the script is cut and strengthened. Meanwhile, the boys have started work on the following week's script. Then comes the broadcast, when the script, which the writers and the comedian have written, will stand or fall. And that, ladies and gentlemen, shows you how easily the spontaneous script you hear on the air is often ad-libbed. The sound effect of the week. From time to time, Behind the Mic presents some sound effect which was used on a program of the past week and tells exactly how it was done. On the program Manhattan at Midnight, the sound effect of a toboggan sled going down a slide was used. It sounded like this. This effect was made, believe it or not, by taking an ordinary pie plate with a hole in the center and spreading it with cornstarch and salt. And then it was placed on a phonograph turntable, and using a needle with a flat end, the pie plate was actually played on the phonograph like a record, a toboggan sled going down a slide. Ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon we're going to take you behind the scenes to show you what happens when NBC decides to build an act and attempt to promote it towards radio success. As a current example, we're going to use a trio called the Singing Powers Models. I want to introduce you to the man who had the idea of forming this group and who is generally responsible for building them up, an executive of NBC's Program and Talent Department, Mr. Ruby Cowan. Hiya, Ruby.
Graham, how are you?
Ruby, exactly who are these girls that NBC decided to try to promote towards radio success?
Well, Graham, they're three gorgeous Powers models.
I can see that.
Girls who pose for advertisements in the big magazines. And they are Lulus.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding. If they were only flowers and I were a bee. Oh, boy.
Well, I tell you, the name of John Powers model has great advertising value. Mm. So we figured that if we could get three of his girls who could sing, and sing well, then they had a chance of clicking. After conferring with Mr. Powers and auditioning 30 of his models, we selected the trio. By we, I mean myself and Bob Kerr, who was to be their personal representative when we sent them out into the theaters.
Couldn't you have rung me in there somewhere, Ruby?
It's too late now, Graham.
Too bad.
The next step was to get a vocal coach, and we decided to select a girl who herself had sung in a trio, Miss Joan Brooks. Joan had been one of the Three Little Words in Phil Spitalny's group, and she'd also been responsible for much of the success of the Four Bells. We hired a crackerjack songwriter, Jay Levison, to write and arrange special material for the trio. He and Joan Brooks got together, and she told him what type of music the girls should have.
Look, Jay, these kids have never worked together as a trio before, and I don't think we ought to give them anything too difficult to start off with.
All right, Joan, what do you want?
Well, they have fresh, sweet voices.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should have fresh, sweet tunes and novelty numbers.
Yeah.
I'd make trio arrangements of melodies like Song of the Islands, and you write whatever novelty numbers you want to.
Okay, I'll get to work right away.
After the numbers are written, Jay and Joan rehearse the girls at Joan's apartment.
Oh, wait a minute, girls. Just a minute. Listen, Carolyn, you're singing a little too loudly.
Oh, I'm sorry, John.
Here's a good thing to remember. Next time any one of you girls can't hear the other two girls, then you're singing too loudly. Now let's take it again.
Hawaiian
Now we figure that we're having the trio work together before an audience would be the best way of seasoning them so they could eventually be presented to a radio sponsor, as well as having them pick up some money.
Oh, now, Ruby, you're just getting commercial.
Well, anyway, Graham, we booked them in out-of-town theaters. In order to get the publicity for them, their personal representative, Bob Kerr, goes into those towns a week before their appearance so that he might make an appointment to see the head of the fashion shops and department stores.
Now, look here. How about having a little fashion show at your store sometime next week when the girls will be in town and use them as models? You can advertise the fashion show and mention that the girls are appearing at the theater. You'll get them as models, and we'll get a plug for their personal appearance.
Well, I think that's a great idea. I'll be glad to, Mr. Carr.
Due to their ability to sing, their beauty, and the publicity they get, they break records in several of the cities in which they appear. And when an act does that, it stands to reason it will be good for a radio sponsor. And that's what we're building them up for, sponsorship.
Well, where'll they be next week, Ruby?
Well, next week they start Friday at the State Theater in Hartford, Connecticut, with Cleveland and Dayton to follow.
Uh-huh. Well, how about getting some radio publicity for them?
Well, we've got them on this program behind the mic, haven't we? And I think that's a good start.
Yes, that's true, Ruby. Well, girls, suppose you show our listeners the type of singing that we hope you'll be doing regularly on the air someday for some nice, big, juicy commercial sponsor.
Merry-go-run as the music plays. She gaily shouts as she goes round the town on her holiday. Cymbals ring and zing as she takes a swing and grabs at the ring. Calliope's play the day away. Each hour is one sweet song. And merry, merry goes round the merry-go-run as the ponies glide. Merry, merry, they ride and ride. What a treat to feel the beat of a thumping drum. Boom, ta-rum, as Mary goes up and down and round and round and round on her merry-go-round.
Oh, I love to hear the calliopes play.
Boom, 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 boom.
But I'd rather swing every night and day. But this is a waltz.
You can swing a waltz. You'll just have to bloop, bloop, and do as we say. A one, a two, a three. Heck.
Mary goes round on her merry-go-round as the music plays. She gaily shouts as she goes round the bar on her holiday. Cymbals ring and zing as she takes the swing and grabs at the ring. Calliope's play the day away. Each hour is one sweet song. And Mary, Mary goes round on her merry-go-round while the ponies glide. Even the grown-ups don't want to be shown up. They ride and ride. What a treat to feel the beat of a thumping drum. Boom, ta-rum, as Mary goes up and down, and round, and round, and round on her merry-go-round.
Thank you, girls, thank you. And boy, oh boy, if you people only knew what you're missing because you ain't got no television sets. It practically got me in tears. Oddities in Radio. presenting odd little true behind-the-mic stories that help make radio sometimes amusing, sometimes exasperating, but always interesting to the people in it. This week's oddity. And here's one of radio's veteran band leaders and one of the grandest guys in the business, B.A. Rolfe, to tell you an experience of his when he had the Lucky Strike program back in 1928. B.A. Rolfe, a shadow of his former self. B.A., that was some band you had back in those days.
Yes, Graham, we had the loudest band that ever hit the airwaves.
Yep.
It was a perfect musical shooting gallery.
Well, what was the story, V.A.?
Well, Graham, one day we were rehearsing in a studio. It was up at 711 Fifth Avenue before the NBC moved to its present palatial quarters. And Dr. Walter Damrosch was NBC's very highly respected and somewhat feared musical director. He had heard about our band, and one day he paid a visit to the studio. He sat in the control room and listened while we blasted away rehearsing. All right, boys, take 5 minutes.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Rolfe.
Oh, hello, Dr. Damrosch. How do you like the band?
Mr. Rolfe, let me ask you one question. Do you broadcast on a network?
Yes, Dr. Damrosch. We are heard coast to coast through 46 stations.
What a waste of money. Why don't you just open the window?
Thank you, V.A. Rolfe. Thank you very much. Behind the Mic salutes a program you loved. We in radio believe that radio has a tradition of which it can well be proud. A tradition of good programs that linger fondly in our memory. And so each week, we bring you a star or a part of a program you used to hear. A program you loved. This afternoon, we salute Whittall's Anglo-Persians, which was on the air from 1926 to 1930, and which featured the music of Louis Katzman and his orchestra. Whittall's Anglo-Persians.
I am the voice of the crystal ball of fate. I lift mine eyes unto the crystal ball, and lo, I see a city of ancient Araby. And mine eyes are amazed to view flying over the city, even as I have read of it in the Arabian Nights, a magic carpet on which is sitting a turbaned prince. The magic carpet fades into the hazy mist. Thank you. look into the crystal ball of fate once more, and lo, the magic carpet has returned from its journey to distant lands. It descends to the palace roof of its princely rider. The crystal ball clouds and then darkens. I see all.
Thank you, Louis Katzman, for helping us recreate a small part of that happy program. It takes me back 16 years. Tom Powers, no relation to John Powers, the model impresario, is undoubtedly one of the most proficient actors of the stage and radio. He's also one of the most delightful raconteurs to whom I've ever had the pleasure of listening. Tom's present program is called That's Not New York, in which he tells true stories about America's largest city. Presenting Tom Powers.
Well, Graham, this story is about a former program of mine called Life Studies, in which I used to tell unusual stories about real people. I offered a certain amount of money for every true story I could use on the air. One day, a man came into my office and told me he was an international jewel thief who had just gotten out of prison after serving a long stretch. His cellmate, Bill, a much younger man, when he was only 18 years old, had killed a policeman. As the jewel thief told it to me, during the boy's trial, things were going pretty much against him, and it looked as if he might wind up in the chair. Then the boy's mother was called as a witness, and as she walked by him toward the stand...
Willie. Oh, Willie.
Listen, Ma. I don't want you to say nothing. Just keep your mouth shut, and I'll beat this rap. Don't you say nothing. If you do, I'll never talk to you again.
This way, please. You do solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Willie, he's a good boy at heart. He just got in with a lot of bad companions. I think it's my fault, too, Your Honor. I've had to make a living for us both. I just couldn't give him the time a growing boy should have. If I could have been with him more, I could have shown him what was right. Oh, please, Your Honor, please, you give him a chance, eh? I'm sure that if he...
And therefore I sentence you to spend the rest of your natural life in the state penitentiary.
Come to see you as soon as they let me.
Don't you ever come near me. You and your preaching, 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 that's all you ever done. I don't ever want to see you again.
All right, Bill. Come along.
Okay.
The jewel thief told me that Bill became his cellmate. He was a sullen, difficult prisoner, and he spent a lot of his time in solitary. Bill was an ignorant boy who could hardly read or write. He'd never known what went on in the world outside his own immediate problems. One day, after he'd been in prison for about a year...
Telegram for you, Bill. Here.
Telegram?
Want me to read it to you, Bill?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Slick.
It's, bad news, Bill. Your mother died this morning.
Yeah? Well, that's too bad. Gee, so Ma died.
The jewel thief told me that he'd become very much interested in Bill. The boy became stricken with remorse and began to feel that his crime had been responsible for his mother's death, and quite rightly so. In the meantime, his cellmate, the jewel thief, for lack of something better to do, and because he found Bill basically intelligent, began to teach him to read and write. They used books they got from the social service agencies.
The Swiss family Robinson. Already the tempest had...
Continued.
continued 6 days. And on the seventh, it's Fury.
Well, you're certainly doing better now than you did 6 months ago. Go on.
Okay. And Tiny Tim said, God bless us, everyone. Say, this ain't... isn't a bad story, is it? Peace ho. Let us hear him. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears.
Can you imagine? 2 years ago, you could hardly read. Go on.
I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is often buried.
The jewel thief told me that when he was ready to leave prison, he found that Bill's viewpoint on life had undergone a considerable change. He was no longer quite as much of a troublemaker as he had been. I thought this was a splendid story. The story of how a thief had helped with the regeneration of a murderer. I told the story on my program, Life Studies. Shortly afterwards, I got a beautifully written letter from the boy himself. He'd heard about my broadcast from one of the men on the prison farm who had listened to it. We began to write to each other. I asked him if he ever had any visitors, and he wrote me that since he'd been in prison, he hadn't had a single one. So that Christmas, I went to see him and took him some books. I write to Bill regularly and make it a point to see him every Christmas. I'm the only visitor he ever has. I'm not saying he's become an angel, Graham, since he's learned to read and write, but since he's learned another angle of life through books, he says he's convinced that he's through with crime. I do my best to keep him in contact with life by writing to him as often as I can, giving him the color of life through my eyes.
How old is he now, Tom?
About 32.
Well, is there any chance of him ever being paroled, Tom?
I don't know. But if he does get paroled, I think he'll be worthy of it.
It's a grand story.
Thank you, Tom Powers. Thank you. Next week's program will be most unusual. It'll be entirely devoted to a salute to the entertainment pioneers of radio. Those gay people who amused you in the days when nobody knew if radio was here to stay. You will hear the voice of the Silver Mask Tenor once more. The music of Godfrey Ludlow. And the voice of my old radio twin, Phillips Carlin. The piano of WEAF's first accompanist, Winifred T. Barr, and many others. This is Graham McNamee saying good afternoon, all.
By Mort Lewis. Original music composed and conducted by Ernie Watson. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the program. We'll be back next week with some more great old-time radio. I hope you can make it for that. This is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.